Hello and welcome to Sox Talk on the Air here at SoxTalk.com. I am Marius Gleiss coming to you from the city of Chicago, and Jason Gage is coming out west from California. What's up, Jason?
What's up? How's the heat wave treating you out there?
It's cooling off a little bit. Just a little bit.
Very nice, very nice. It's actually been nice out here.
So I got my tan. I'm ready to go.
I'm getting ready, to get back to, being the star of OC and Laguna Beach and, just getting back to living that movie style, rock style life.
So you tried out for the show, didn't you? I knew it.
Of course. There's a character named Jason on one of those shows.
And it's you?
They made it after me.
They just refer to you every week. They just want to get some notes on your life. What happened this week? I gotcha. Well, the Sox, 4-2 in the past week since our last show. 6-3 overall when you count in the Orioles series.
So yeah, it was a nice 6-3 road trip. All that's positive. Yet they lose games in the standings. They're now 9 games behind the Detroit Tigers and the AL Central. However, they're half a game up over the Boston Red Sox and Minnesota Twins in the wild card race. And the question is, this week you have the Detroit Tigers playing the Minnesota Twins. Should we, in all reality, be rooting for the Detroit Tigers? Or is it a factor that we should actually be rooting for the Minnesota Twins? Because this weekend we have the Tigers, and we're going to be previewing that series in a little bit, that we could have a realistic chance of, if the Twins do good against the Tigers, and we do good against the Yankees, and then we do good against the Tigers, that we could cut that lead into, five or six
games. It comes down to how confident are you in the Sox in making a run at this division. If you still feel that the division is possible and it's within reach, then you want the Twins to win, and you figure, let the Twins win, we'll deal with them later on. But if you're of the case that the Tigers are going to take that division and the Twins are going to be a threat going through the end of September, then you gotta be hoping for the Tigers to win. But I would be rooting for the Twins.
I'm rooting for the Twins, but I'm rooting for the Twins for a whole other reason, because I don't want to see the Red Sox in the playoffs, and I'm convinced the White Sox aren't going to make the playoffs.
Oh.
So I have no problem if the Twins see two Central teams and two
show is over.
East teams.
No more show, huh? We're done.
What can I say? It's gonna become twinstalk.com.
Why do you think Chicago, that?
Well, here's my
without
analysis.
Without getting angry, without getting upset.
Here's my analysis of this ball club. Great offense. That's fine and dandy, but a great offense doesn't win squat. I've said it before. Anyone that follows baseball remotely knows pitching and defense wins. Yet so many teams, Baltimore Orioles, for example, decide that, offense is more important. Or the Chicago White Sox right now, offense is obviously, I think Ozzy and I think Kenny, they realize pitching is important. That's why they invested all this money into this 5-man staff. That's why Kenny went out and traded for Javier Vasquez this offseason, making Brandon McCarthy their sixth starter. Apparently, and there was no reason to know that Freddie Garcia would lose, 6 mph on his fastball and become a bum. We obviously didn't know that it would take, a long time to see if even Javier Vasquez becomes anything more than a fifth starter, because that's about been what he's been this year, and he can't even go past 5 innings. We had no idea Mark Burley would have a stretch of baseball that was his worst stretch in any time in his career. We didn't know that everyone continues to call Jose Contreras an ace, despite the fact that Jose Contreras is not an ace. When you have 6 good starts, go on the disabled list, and then have an ERA over 4.5 since then, you are not considered an ace in my mind. John Garland isn't considered an ace by most people. Right now he's the ace of the staff, but that's a word that gets thrown around too often. Yeah. And Garland has been the only guy pitching consistently well over the last 8 or 9 starts. But we don't mistake in the fact that Garland stunk for, 10, 11, 12 starts. But Jose Contreras has kind of done the opposite of things. He has not been as bad as Garland was, though, those initial starts.
He's keeping the Sox in the game. I think he is doing that. Even with yesterday's game against the Blue Jays, where he had that big blow up, he at least kept the game close for the most part.
But here's my problem: that road trip, we coulda, shoulda, and woulda
won
9-0, and last year's Chicago White Sox team woulda probably went at least 8-1, if not 9-0. And the reason I say that, last year's Chicago White Sox team did not lose games. This year's Chicago White Sox team, all season long they've been losing games.
Yes.
And when you do that, you are not a very good baseball team. You got to capitalize when you have the lead, you got to go for the kill, and you got to hold leads and maintain. And our starting pitching is about as bad as there's a rotation in baseball when it comes to holding leads.
Well,
too many times do I see our offense score three runs and then give up, you know, two more back. Jose Contreras has done a great job of that as of late.
If you
Mark Burley has been fabulous at
that. If you watch a team enough, you're going to be able to find flaws that other fans of other teams would say the same thing about that particular team. Yes, they do have problems. I wouldn't say that they are the worst in baseball when it comes to holding leagues, okay? Do you think that this past week, though, was there any positive from a rotation standpoint? Burley, now granted, was the Kansas City Royals. Burley is the type of pitcher where it's all on him. It doesn't matter whether you're the Royals or whether you're the Yankees. If he's bad, you could hit him, because you got to remember, his problem started back with the Cubs. The Cubs were a bad hitting team, and they were able to hit him, okay? So, Burley pitches effectively against the Royals. Garland had a strong start. Vasquez won, what, 8 innings, I believe?
Yeah, 8 innings, 2 hits,
13 strikeouts. And Contreras, while he did have that bad inning, he's still pitching decently. I think there was still some nice signs this past week.
Here's the thing. If the White Sox make the playoffs, And if they're going to do well, it's going to be because of the four men named Javi, Jose, Mark, and John. Not Freddie Garcia. Freddie Garcia is not a playoff starter. He's not a realistic, solid starter. I mean, he's just not. The other four guys have the stuff. They have the ability. They have what they had. And I know Mark Burley doesn't have stuff, but, I mean, he has the same stuff he's had all career long. His fastball might be down a couple mile an hour in velocity, but for the most part, if he locates,
yeah,
he can be.
It's
Mark
been down before, and he's pitched fine with it.
So the question is, after, you know, over half of a season, why are they going to figure it out now? That's what I want to know. Magic switches don't just go on. A lot of teams, people expect that. It's like people always expected, you know, the LA Lakers just to turn on a magic switch, or the Chicago Bulls. But the fact of the matter is, the Lakers when they were good, the Bulls when they were good. All year long. They didn't just turn on some magic switch and start to win. And basketball is a bit different because it's easy to make the playoffs in basketball. It's not easy to make the playoffs in baseball. I'm convinced there's times where the best team doesn't make the playoffs in baseball. You know? It happens because there's only 4 teams
I don't know if it's about a magic switch that you could just turn on. You know, I think it's about them figuring things out. I don't think the Sox have been kind of laying down and taking it easy. I think just their starters have struggled. I think the one positive you could take is that these guys are all capable of figuring it out. And really, when you look, now Garcia has problems. He definitely has some injury problems that he's got to get figured out. I don't think he's pitching bad because he's a bad pitcher. I just think he's lost about 5-6 miles on his fastball, maybe even more, and that's the cause of his problems. When you look at Burley, though, I think he can figure it out. I think last start was maybe a start for it, and him facing today against the Angels, we could see how he does again. Okay, you know what Garland has done. Contreras, he's been at least keeping the team in the game. Vasquez, he has the capabilities, and if Cooper, working with this little new delivery, this little arm slot, if that's, if that possibly makes him into a more consistent pitcher, you know, now there's a lot of ifs, but I think it's all possible that these guys could figure it out over the final 2 months of the season. Because they've all done it before.
I said it 4 to 5 starts ago. If the White Sox are going to go anywhere, Javier Vasquez will have to be the ace of the staff. If the White Sox are going to go anywhere. And Javi Vasquez has the capabilities. I've really trumped him up. I've really talked well about him for the last 3 years.
Well, you know what?
Came out and had a good outing.
I would like to go back to his last maybe 30 innings pitched, 35 innings pitched, and take out 5 innings of those, and you probably have an ERA of about 1.
No, you take out like 3 innings and you have an ERA of about 1.
So once again, the capabilities are there. And when you face the Toronto Blue Jays staff, he actually played Toronto, right? It actually didn't make a difference whether it was – he beat Toronto in his last start.
It was Saturday. He beat Toronto.
So you're not facing a rinky – if he would have done this against the Royals, which he's done a few times, and you made that point earlier in the year and I kind of wiped it off, but you were probably right on it. You know, a lot of his early wins came against the Royals. He went up against a good Toronto hitting offense, and he handled him pretty well. Now, his next start is going to come against the Yankees here in Chicago.
Against Mike Mussina.
Against Mussina. Mussina's their best pitcher. He's their ace. He's their big guy, so that's going to be a big start for him, especially depending how the first two games go. Of course, if the Sox lose those first two games, it's going to be a desperate win for that game 3. But I'm curious to see how he's going to handle that start against the Yankees.
I'm picking if the Sox, the way everything matches up, if we're going to be optimistic, if this team's going to do anything, they're going to win 5 out of 6. If they don't, they will not be going anywhere.
Are you
Unless
including,
there's
are,
like,
are, you're not,
I'm not including you're obviously, the Angels game. I'm not including the Angels game.
Okay.
I'm talking Yankees. I'm talking Detroit Tigers.
Well, let's look at the Angels game. Let's look at the Angels game. Where are the Angels coming from? Where were they?
They had a game at 12:35 in the afternoon. They put up 9 runs. Joe Saunders went 7 innings. Their bullpen was able to rest. Kevin Gray came in and pitched the final 2 innings. The Angels won 9-0, unless they gave up a run in the ninth
were
inning.
They were in L.A.?
Yeah, it was
or
in
Anaheim.
Anaheim.
Okay, so they're going to be flying out to Chicago and then probably taking off right after. So maybe there's some type of an advantage there. But either way, it's Burley versus Escobar.
So it's a guy that gets no run support. I'm talking about Kelvin Escobar. But he also has very, very good stuff.
Yes.
He's one of those guys like Javi Vasquez or A.J. Burnett that there's no excuse for those pitchers to have, 500 winning percentages or right around that.
Yeah.
Because their arms are dynamite. I mean, you watch Burnett pitch that game against Contreras, and when he was throwing that curveball, it is nasty. And his fastball just jumps out and explodes out of his hands. That there's no reason that A.J. Burnett has an ERA like well into the fours. It may even be in the fives for all I know.
Yeah.
I mean, you have that, and Escobar's that type of guy. But Escobar's ERA is, in the threes, and he still doesn't win games. And Burley, historically, he seems to pitch pretty solid against the Angels. But
yeah,
the Angels
last year
good.
He had a 3.47 ERA against them. And I think if you go back to his career against L.A., it's 3.80. So, I mean, yeah, he's been, decent. He's probably gotten hit a couple times. Probably whenever he got into the West Coast, I'm sure he had some bad starts because it seemed like everything went wrong when the Sox went out west. But he's put up decent numbers against the Angels. I think that could very well be a winnable game, especially with the Sox hitting like they've been. And that really goes to Jim Thome and Paul Konerko, who I've been very critical of them too, as good as their numbers have been all year. Jermaine Dye, I think he's been great, but Thome and Konerko, I have had problems with their approach. They've come back, and I've been impressed with them. Konerko seems to be going all the other way a little bit more. Thome seems to be not trying to hit the ball 600 feet and just trying to make contact and use his natural power to hit the ball hard somewhere. Pretty impressive to see that.
Yeah, they both had as good of a series as I've seen out of a 3-4 hitter, considering they weren't hitting for power. And obviously it would have been nice if Aguchi and Pasenik were really getting on base a bunch. But although Pasenik did have a good game where he had a bunt and then he stole a base, I was shocked. But Pasenik also played crappy defense out there, which is, the reason why there is no excuse for Scott Pasenik to be a member of the Chicago White Sox at the end of this offseason. And you had a game where Rob Mikowiak on Friday, we won the game, and the fact that he was playing center field, it gave up a run, it cost us a run. Even Hawk finally mentioned it, and Hawk has been way too empathetic for a man, Ozzie Guillen, who's consistently and continuously put players in a position where they will fail. They will fail.
And I do agree with you about Mikowiak. I think considering the situation that Mikowiak was put in, considering he's never really gotten a chance to play center field, I think you have to cut him some slack. And I think it's unfortunate when a guy like him gets criticized by fans or gets ripped on by fans because it's not really his fault. You're a Major League Baseball player. A guy tells you to play center field. You don't have no option. You got to go out there and you got to do the best you can. And he's simply not a Major League center fielder. I think occasionally he should be out there, but occasionally he is out there a little bit too much over the course of the week because they're trying to protect the confidence of Brian Anderson when he's facing certain pitchers or when certain pitchers are going up against the Sox. But at the same time, that defense in center field, it's big sometimes because, I don't think Mikowiak is terrible in center field, but there are plays out there where Anderson would at least get much closer to it than Mikowiak will.
Anderson statistically, and we all know I hate statistics, is the best center fielder in baseball, statistically.
Yes.
Range factor, everything else. Rob Mikowiak is far from that. And the fact of the matter is, any fan that sits here and boos or blames Mikowiak is an idiot.
Yeah.
I'll be plain and simple, because it has nothing to do with Robin Kovac. It has everything to do with our manager. And our manager's actually going to get to see good manager.
If you were to go put a Paul Konerko at third base and he were to make, you know, a whole bunch of errors there, it's not his fault. You know what I mean? His spot is first base. But Kovac's role in his team when he was brought here should have been to serve as a backup to Creedy in case he has any back problems like he has now. You know, to play first base occasionally, to play left field occasionally, play right field occasionally, pretty much play the corners. That's what his role is. And then once in a while, you pop him in center field. But his role should not have been to be a regular center fielder.
And part of the problem is we have Ross Gloed on this roster. And we know the two of us love Ross Gloed. And Gloed's had some big hits. I think he's a good hitter. And I think if I were a GM, I had no problem playing Ross Gloed and giving him 400 at-bats. Mm-hmm. However, with this team, Ross Gloed, and I've said it all season, is not a good fit because we need a right-handed bat that can play center field. Or a left-handed bat. It really doesn't matter to me, but we need a right-handed bat off that bench.
And I don't know if this is what the Sox are thinking, but you look at this last week with Tomy and Konerko hurt, you know? What if Tomy's injury, which was back-related, what if that was a little bit more serious than it was? You know, what if something happens with Tomy where he ends up missing 2-3 weeks? It would be nice to have a guy like Ross Gloed you could pop in there, because I would feel more comfortable with him rather than a Mikoviak or anybody else in that lineup.
We know. I feel just as comfortable with a Ross Gloed as a plate as I do with Jim Tomy.
Considering, you know, the numbers and everything else, of course.
Yeah. I'm not saying I'd rather have Ross Gloed than Jim Tomy. No. I'm just saying I feel comfortable because Gloed has a good approach to the plate. He knows what he's doing up there. And Paul Konerko said, if this guy's one of the best hitters on the team, you know, he's the best fielding first baseman on the team, yada, yada, yada. And the big thing for me is I want to see Ozzie start to manage. Otherwise, I want to see a new manager.
It goes back to what you said last week, and you hit it right in the head. Be more aggressive. He has not been aggressive at all.
And I'm going to go on the flip side. I go to a lot of Angel games. I watch a lot of Angel games. And I've ripped Mike Scioscia at times in the past. But Mike Scioscia is doing a damn good managerial job this year. He's changed the lineup up. He's shaked things up. He's not been afraid to be aggressive. And now, all of a sudden, the Angels are the front runners in that AL Western division. They may not be, you know, ahead of Oakland right now. But with the way their pitching staff's playing, with the way Juan Rivera has turned into, you know, one of the best outfielders in the game over the last, you know, 50 days, you have to watch and consider those Angels, and he does it. He does a lot of hit and runs. He steals bases.
The problem
he's really been creative.
It's real simple. Guillen is in this mode, and he's probably not going to admit it, but he's lying if he doesn't. He's in a situation where he does not want to go out there and waste any outs, and he's just open. Listen, our guys are going to be able to hit the home runs to score us runs. I don't want to risk this guy getting thrown out, or I don't want to risk, you know, trying to hit and run and the guy swinging through and missing it. And that's just a horrible, horrible idea to have. You know, the other day, Scott Pitsenik got on with a single, I believe, and Tadi Taguchi, after having a horrible first at bat, he butts him over to second. Now, the approach of Jim Tomy then, it makes it a little easier for him. Now he's not trying to hit that ball out of the park. Maybe he's just saying, you know what, there's a guy in second. All I got to do is make it a single. Because I think when you do that, when you bunt a guy over, or when you have guys moving, you let the batter know behind him, the guy who's coming up, that we put this guy at second base so that a single will drive him in.
Yeah, and we discussed it last show when I was talking about a situation with Tomy on first, Tomy at the plate. There were two outs, and I sat there and I said, we should be sending Pablo Azuna because he is our best base runner, and get him to second, because you can't just have Tomy up there thinking he has to hit home run
that's
every time
it.
Because that's not a good approach for a hitter. And now Tomy's came out, and against Toronto, he wasn't trying to hit home runs. I don't think he hit a home run the entire series. I don't think the team hit a home run the entire series. And yet we were able to score runs. Konerko was getting singles. He was getting doubles. He was drawing walks. Tomy was doing the same. And I don't care if they didn't hit any home runs, because they were more effective.
Yes. And that's the risk of having a home run hitter. And while the home runs are great and the numbers are unbelievable, whenever you have that home run hitter in your lineup or have home run hitters in your lineup, you become a little bit too reliant on it, so you lose other aspects of your game. And those other aspects, hitting and running, stealing, while it's not going to score you a lot of runs, it could come in handy in key situations late in games down the stretch. when you have a pitcher on the mound who's just flat out dominating you and you just need to kind of come up with something creative. Because if you got a guy, if you're facing a Johan Santana late in the season and it's a big game, you can't try to look for a home run. But if you get a guy in first base, you might be able to hit the ball to the right side and hit and run and have the second baseman off, and then you have a first and third situation. Things like that are going to be a little bit easier when you're facing those top-of-the-line starters, because then it's just a matter of making contact instead of trying to hit the ball a long way.
And it's a matter of the White Sox doing what they did last year, which was winning games they shouldn't have won. While this year, we lose games we should have won. And when you think about it in the actual like switch, it's like when a team is going down, looks like they're going to get an easy dunk, and instead the ball is stolen away, and the team goes back the other way, and it's like a 4-point swing.
Yeah.
We're talking like a few game swing, and even more so this year, because this team has lost a lot of games that they should have won on stupid execution, stupid fundamentals, you know, just a lot of no-brainers. And a guy that's really got really been hammered by Ozzie is Juan Uribe as of late because of his lackadaisical play, or so it's called, and we're seeing a lot more Cintron over there at shortstop. And, you know, this is fun and dandy, but I want to know one thing, Ozzy. And this is something that bothers me about Ozzy. And this is a show where I've been slamming Ozzy, and I'll admit I'm one of his biggest critics. And I've at times been one of his bigger supporters because I think he does a lot of things well. However, he continues to play favorites because Scott Pesednik was playing like shit defensively. He was taking his at-bats to the field, yet he was never benched for that. Juan Uribe, on the other hand, has become benched for that. And Juan Uribe is one of the premier shortstops in the game defensively. I don't care that he had a week where he was struggling defensively. That happens.
I'm gonna go into defense of Ozzie when it comes to that. When you're talking about Scott Pesednik, while he wasn't benched, he did see a decrease in playing time because Ozuna played more and more and more and more. Number two, when you're talking about Uribe, his problem with Uribe wasn't that his defense was bad. His problem was that his defense was lackadaisical. I don't think Pesednik was lazy in the outfield. I think he was just taking his offense into his defense. In Uribe's case, he feels that Uribe has just been very, very nonchalant over there, and that's been the case. But that's also how Uribe plays. Uribe plays that type of style. I brought this up earlier in the year. I don't know if you remember. I don't know if I brought it up in the show. I believe I did. But one thing you see different than Uribe than last year is he's very tentative. It seemed like last year he would get the ball and he would throw it 99 miles an hour to first base, and he was always had that adrenaline. And this year, it seems like he's catching, he's taking his time, he's flipping a little bit more. And, you know, Paul Konerick, when Ross Glode was played for Paul Konerick, while I think Ross Glode is a good defensive first baseman, that showed how great Paul Konerko has become, because there were a few throws that Creedy and Uribe made that Glode didn't make the pick on and were charged with errors. Where if you have Konerko in there, those are picks and nobody says a damn thing about it.
I've said first base defense is truly underestimated because you watch Minnesota Twins games and you see Justin Morneau, he butchers balls that are in the dirt.
Chris Shelton.
And then you go and you watch the White Sox, and I'd be hard-pressed to find a better first baseman than Paul Konerko when it comes to saving the throws, from, yeah, whether it's Creedy, because Creedy, as great as he is defensively, has some problems when it comes to throwing.
Oh, yeah.
And Uribe, sometimes his throws are who knows where. And Konerko, it's like, no matter what, it's going to be caught. I mean,
and
he
a lot
is
of
so
times,
good over there.
And a lot of times when you have a guy like Konerko, who really, when he started playing first base, he wasn't a top-of-the-line first baseman. He was an average first baseman. It was his hitting that got him out there. It was his hitting that got him in the papers and got him in the line in the spotlight. So now he's considered a hitter and just another first baseman. But really, he's a pretty damn good first baseman if you watch him on a regular basis.
Yeah, he's no David Ortiz over at first base.
Well, that's why David Ortiz is DHing.
Exactly. And he's no Jason Giambi.
But now let's look at this Yankees series now. It's coming up. You're facing Wing in that first
loss.
Game. That you could almost see that's a loss. Yeah. Unless Garcia does what he did about 2 weeks ago and he puts up a nice 8-inning performance, which is always possible because the Yankees offense, every once in a while, they have the capabilities of just completely sucking over the course of a game. So that is possible, but if you would have to put money in anybody in this game, you have to put in the Yankees with Wang.
Yeah, Wang, you know, throws 95, 96 mile an hour. He's been good all season long, and Freddy Garcia hasn't.
Yeah, that's the bottom line. And you have two good offenses, so it's not like you could say Wang's facing a better offense. They're both pretty damn powerful offenses. In game two, who would have thunk that Randy Johnson, you know, 3-4 years ago, you would have said, you know what, Randy Johnson is a winnable game. But it has now become that because he has been very, very mediocre for 2 years now.
And the White Sox, they hit him good last year. We were at the game when they hit back-to-back-to-back home runs off him. And John Garland, you know, he gave up a 3-run homer to Troy Glosses last start, pitched six, you know, the rest of the game scoreless.
Yeah.
And the
and
start
he
before
was,
that,
and if he was sick that start before, somewhat understandable. So I mean, you take that start out, then you're talking about a guy who since what, July, June, July, has been getting better and better and better as every start goes on. So I could see him definitely going in that game and shutting the Yankees down, and the Sox having capabilities of getting on Johnson.
No, I completely agree. That's a game where the Sox are going to need a win because they're going to be coming off a loss, and the last thing you want is going to have Javi Vasquez going up against the Yankees ace needing to win, or you're going to get swept.
Yes. Well, the third game, you have Mike Mussina going against Vasquez, and if you look at the numbers, you're probably going to favor Mussina, but the one thing I'll say is the Yankees' bullpen isn't very deep. If they could find a way to get Johnson out of the game early, and really, I think Johnson has become a 5-6 inning pitcher now. Maybe, you know, I don't have the numbers, so maybe I'm wrong in that. But Johnson seems like he's a 5-6 inning pitcher. If they could get to the bullpen in those first two games and get to that bullpen early, Mike Mussina is one guy who, if you're patient off him, you foul some pitches off because he's not a guy who's going to completely be lights out. If you could get him to get some of his pitch count up, you could get into that bullpen because I see that's where you have to get with these when it comes to Johnson and Mussina. Try to get their pitch counts up, try to get to that bullpen, and go from there.
I see us getting to Messina, I see us getting another win. I have confidence in Javi Vasquez. So, I got the Sox winning the series.
You got the Tigers now, right after. If the Sox pull off two wins, let's say they beat the Angels, they pull off two wins against the Yankees, maybe three, but let's say with two, you know, they lose that first game, that'll put them 3-1. And with the Twins facing the Tigers, you know, who knows what happens there, but they're going to be facing the Tigers on Friday. Game one is Verlander versus Contreras. Verlander, wasn't he skipped?
He missed his last start, but it was not because
it was precautionary
injury. It was more the fact that he was just a little tired. Okay. And this is what the Tigers are going to have to start doing more of, is skipping turns from Verlander, because Verlander's innings are up there. So you got to be careful, because this guy, Verlander, this kid is fun to watch. I mean, he's good.
You know what? You know me. There's a lot of young pitchers in the game who I watch, and I'm like, nah, I don't feel comfortable. Verlander, I could see him being a very good pitcher for a very long time. You know, I have some doubts when it comes to Liriano and other young guys, but with Verlander, I think he has the capabilities. But I think with him going and with him missing that start because he's a little bit fatigued, same situation with Mussina and getting to the Yankees bullpen. In this case, you just got to get him to get his pitch count up, because you know, especially if they drop some to the Twins, they're going to be very hesitant to keep Verlander in a game long.
Well, plus, let's say the Twins play good. I'm just throwing situations out here. And this is kind of what you have to do when your team has not played good enough to the fact where they can control their own destiny.
Yes.
And the White Sox can't do that anymore. Technically, we could. We could still, you know, control the wild card and yada, yada, yada. But you put a lot more on what other teams are going to have to do.
The goal should always be the division. You should always try to strive for the division.
Exactly. Because then you know you're set.
Yeah, the fallback option is the wild card, and that's always good. You don't want to have the goal to be something that, you know, if you don't get it, you're screwed. It can't be into like an all or nothing situation.
But let's hypothetically say that the Twins take 2 out of 3 or sweep and just play really impressive against the Tigers.
And it's possible then, with Liriano and Santana.
Then all of a sudden you have the Tigers. And usually when the Tigers have hit a little losing streak, it's like the schedule comes up and they're playing another bad team and they can get right back on a track. But instead, they're playing the White Sox. And then all of a sudden, if the White Sox take care of business, now the Tigers are reeling. Maybe they've just lost 5 of 6, or who knows, maybe the impossible. They just lost all 6 games to the Tigers and Twins. And all of a sudden, you know, let's say the lead comes down to 4 games, 5 games. Now what's happening? You have the Twins and Sox all of a sudden
that
right back
momentum
in there, and they're thinking, oh, shit. Maybe finally that young team hits a little losing streak and gets some negative things going, because right now it's like whenever it needs to, they find a way to get right back
on
track.
And what you're going to do is you're going to force them, especially if they get that game down. You're going to force them, guys like Verlander, you're going to force them to use them deep into these games because their bullpen's good. But you're still, you're going to be very hesitant to pull your starters after 5-6 innings, especially when you got, you know, you're in a playoff stretch. You're going to try to go out there and try to get the most out of them. So it'll be interesting. I'm really curious to see how long they have Verlander go when he plays the Sox on Friday. I'm really curious to see if they're going to have him high pitch count. Is he going to be about 90 pitches and done? I'm curious to see what's the case going to be, because I'd like to see the Sox battle with him and become the Sox of last year, where even if they didn't hit you, they made sure they foul off enough pitches to at least get your pitch count up and get you a little worn out.
Regardless, this is the biggest week of White Sox baseball to date.
Yes.
And I know we said that, you know, one other time because the Sox had a series with the Tigers and I think Twins in the same week.
But that happens every single year. As the season goes on, the series get more and more and more important.
Exactly. And it's going to be big to see what happens. And it starts off, we're going to be a lot of national televised games. So a lot of people are going to either be jumping on the Sox bandwagon or finally realizing that this team, yes, they have a great winning percentage. Yes, they have all these other things. Just isn't a playoff team. And that's kind of how I always felt about the Yankees the past couple years. That, yeah, they could get into the playoffs, but they're not going to go anywhere once they get in because the Yankees didn't have the pitching.
I was thinking this the other day. You know, you look at last year, the Sox team was great. And if you watch them for the regular season, outside of the few weeks that they struggled late in the season, but if you watch them through the regular season, you see their dominance in the playoffs. You look at that team and it was great. Yet the national media didn't really notice it. Now this year, when you watch this team, which isn't nearly as good as last year, while their record's good, they're not nearly as good. They're winning a lot in talent alone. The national media still considers this team to be, you know, a team that's just as good as last year. Because once again, you look at the numbers and things look pretty good.
Yeah, and it's the fact that you're not watching them, you know, on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's a lot of things. And, you know, our bullpen has gotten strong. It's become a strength. And if you take out, you know, obviously we can't do this, but I think their bullpen ERA with the current guys in there is 3.73, which is a pretty solid bullpen.
That's respectable, yes.
I mean, this Ken Williams, this team may not go anywhere. But, I mean, like I said, this team is going nowhere unless those four starters do their jobs.
You have
those
to give credit.
Starters do those jobs.
You have to give credit to Williams, though. I think he screwed up in the offseason by getting rid of Vasquez and Marte, and Hernandez wasn't going to be in the bullpen, but I think he screwed up. But getting Thornton, getting Risky, getting McDougal, you got to give him a lot of credit for that.
He's found a way to turn a weakness, something we talked about all spring training, we talked about early in the regular season, we talked about midway through the regular season, into his strength, and that's that bullpen. And that's going to be a strength, assuming guys stay healthy
yes.
for a long time. Because
assuming the starters go deep into games. Because if you have the Burleys and the Burleys and the Vasquezes and the Contreras going seven innings now, you have two innings left in which you have Cost, you have Thornton, you have Jinks, you have McDougal, you have a lot of guys to go to finish off that game who have good stuff.
And,
so the key is just to get it to that point.
With the lead and see if we can hold it. And at times, see if we can come back, you know. There's going to be games where you're losing.
On Saturday, you have Kenny Rogers versus Mark Burley, which I think it's a fairly even matchup. You know, Rogers has had problems in the second half. You know, his last start against the Indians, he gave up some early runs. He settled down. I think he gave up 3 runs total. I think Travis Hettner kind of beat him a little bit. But still, with Kenny Rogers, there's no guarantees in the second half as opposed to the first half. You know you can hit them. So I think that'll be interesting to see how they get with Rogers. And in game three, you have Zach Minor versus Garcia. I don't know if I've seen Minor pitch before. I'm not sure if you have either.
Minor's a solid pitcher. I think Tiger fans overhype him a bit.
Okay.
But like I said, the one thing that makes me feel semi-confident is I like the way this week matches up for us. Because the Angels are the team that's traveling, you know, having to kind of make an awkward travel schedule to come to Chicago. And then, you know, we start off where we could get in a big hole against the Yankees, but our next two starts we have a chance. And then against the Tigers, Verlander being tired, Contreras, you know, maybe he can prove the fact that I was wrong and he can pitch a top-notch game. Then Saturday you have Burley against Rogers. Rogers is not very good in the second half. Hopefully Burley will be coming off two good starts. And then Sunday you have a guy in Garcia that if there's ever a team I'd have faith in him pitching against, it's the Detroit Tigers because he tends to do good against Detroit, even though I think Detroit is such a better team now than they were, you know, last year, the year before that. But
I mean, when Contreras this year, obviously in the beginning of the season he was pretty good, but he's got a 2-1 against the Tigers, 2.05 ERA, of course, that was pre-injury. So
his loss came, you know, a few starts, it was just a couple weeks ago where he pitched great and our team just couldn't get the runs, and I think we lost 2-1.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, as average as Contreras has been, you still know he has the capabilities of shutting down a team like the Tigers, which he's done this year on 3 occasions. So, I think it's not. It's a pretty comfortable week. You know, I think obviously every game is important. The series against the Angels, this game against the Angels, could keep things going because the last thing you want to do, especially after losing a game like you did yesterday, you don't want to go out there and drop another one in and put yourself probably 10 games out. That would be a pretty big hole.
Well, not to mention the fact you don't want to have a two-game losing streak with Garcia taking the hill, having to be the stopper, because
Yeah.
Garcia's not a stopper against the Yankees.
No,
I mean, the Yankees can hit home runs, and Garcia gives them up.
Now, in other news, Dustin Hermanson seems like his career in the Sox is over. He's not really coming. I mean, what he needs about 2-3 days between every time he throws in the minors, which pretty much means that the Sox aren't going to want to take a chance coming him up because their bullpen's kind of set. So he might be gone.
Yeah, he has two options. Ken Williams has given him two options. He can either go back on the 15-day disabled list and then come up as a September call-up, or the White Sox are more than happy to release him and he can go pitch for another team. And I got to give Ken Williams credit because that's a real classy move, and there's no way to forget that this team wouldn't be World Series champions if it weren't for the performance and the way Dustin Hermanson came in and replaced Shingo Takatsu, you know, last
And
season
just the
because.
second half, you know, you get into Bobby Jenks, and he pretty much said, you know what? He's the closer. I'm going to step aside. I realize I got a back problem, and I'm just going to fight it off and deal with it. So you got to give a tremendous amount of credit and a tremendous amount of respect to Hermanson for how he handled the second half of last year.
Yeah, you have to tip your cap to that guy. I mean, he was a consummate veteran. He was big in that bullpen. He helped with the youngsters, and he pitched great
And I
for a
don't know
season
if
with
he
the
would
White Sox.
necessarily want to jump to another team. I mean, I know maybe he goes to another team and he might have a possibility of getting to the playoffs, but I think he's in a case where this is probably his last run. I think he made that clear in the beginning of the season where he may not come back. So I think if he does come back, it's probably going to be his last little run. So I think he's going to want to make sure that he goes to a playoff team. And considering they're the Sox, maybe he might feel, you know what, if I could come here in September and I could get a good couple weeks in which I'm pitching, you know, maybe not late in the game, but if he gives a quality fifth, sixth inning, he may not be eligible for the playoffs, but at least he did do something to help the team down the stretch.
Yeah. Or if he wants to actually play, you know, again next season, then obviously it I'm gonna go to even to a bad team and just, you know, get some innings.
Showcase
And I
himself.
would not look down on him at all for that. He
No.
he's won a World Series title. He's, you know, he's been a key player. And the fact of the matter is, at this point, now you do what makes you happy, because you know you've done the team thing, and you know now you can look towards your career, because he doesn't really have a spot here in Chicago. It'd be different if we had a spot in the bullpen, but there's no guy I would send down for him, unless you're talking about, you know, moving McCarthy down and getting him ready to start. But at this point, it's too late. I mean, by the time McCarthy's ready, you're talking September 1st, and now you're really pressing. Now you're just hoping that he can have the magic for four starts. That's just a little risky.
It is. It is very risky. Right now, it seems like you have to. I mean, if you're gonna do it,
You had to do it a while ago.
yeah. But I mean, if there's any small window, it's right now too. And if it's not done in the next few days, you're pretty much just forgetting about it completely for the rest of the year. There's still that slight possibility you could do it, and that small window is risky. But that small window is still there, and you might be able to sneak something in. Of course, it'll be interesting. You know, what if there's just a start where Garcia goes out there and he throws one pitch and he's in serious pain. Serious pain where he can't pick up the ball and throw anymore. It'll be interesting to see what happens then.
Yeah, well, and we'll see. A lot of things can happen, and
Who do you
hey.
think? Now, obviously, McCarthy would not be an option. Is there any AAA player who would be an option?
As a starter,
Yes.
Sean Tracy, but Ozzie hates Sean Tracy, so that's not going to ever happen. And you know, I'm not going to get into the depth of the farm system right now, because there is no depth. We have one of the three or four worst farm systems in all baseball. I mean, there's no right way to put it. And I mean, I follow the system very avidly, more so than probably 99.999% of Sox fans. I've interviewed players in the organization, and the fact of the matter is, our system is ugly. You have to hope, you know, as White Sox fans, that they had a really good draft this year, and that some of these guys are going to emerge as upper echelon prospects. But right now, we have Josh Fields, we have a guy like Lance Broadway, that's, you know, maybe a middle of the rotation guy, and then you have Ryan Sweeney, who I think we've all seen in spring training from time to time, who, you know, flashes a lot of talent. He has a lot of
And
talent. He
it's unfortunate too because you go into this season and Kenny Williams stressed the value of having a six starter like a Brandon McCarthy, and then of course when there's numerous opportunities to use that six starter, you just don't entertain the thought. And that's kind of upsetting because you spent a lot of money in that rotation and you made a very big thing about wanting to have a deep rotation and you don't take advantage of it at all over the course of a year. And that, if there's one knock on Kenny Williams, that would be the knock, is you do not go out there and make a big deal about needing that sixth starter and then not take advantage of it when the opportunity comes. And if it's because they didn't have the bullpen and they needed McCarthy to serve as a late inning guy, that's their fault too, because they should have seen that earlier in the year that their bullpen wasn't as good as last year.
Technically, though, I think when it comes to McCarthy, you can't really put that on Ken Williams because it's Ozzie Guillen's call. I mean, he's the one that manages the 25-man roster and how those players actually get used. It's Kenny that gives him the talent and gets him the guys, and Kenny did his job. I obviously don't think you can blame Ozzie Guillen for, you know, our pitching like crap. So, I mean, he gets it a little rough because even with some of the poor things that I've blamed him for, if the starting rotation was pitching, you know, not even like it was last year, but just pitching near their career, you know, near their averages or what they're capable of, you know, we wouldn't be talking about this. They'd be right there with the Tigers and, you know, eight or nine games up in the wild card lead. But the fact of the matter is the pitching staff struggled and it meant more people were going to look at Ozzie and kind of wonder what's going on because, you know, Jerry Manuel didn't get any excuses. He didn't get any favors pulled. I mean, let's be honest. Hawk Harrelson lambasted Jerry Manuel numerous times. And mm-hmm. those were talented teams. But those teams weren't as talented as this team is right now. And I kind of want to wonder why Hawk Harrelson picks and chooses his battles because, you know, there's things Ozzie could be doing that's better. I don't think there's a manager in the game that does everything perfect. And I'm not saying I would, by all means, we would suck if I was running the show.
It's different when you're on the field. When you're talking about Hawk, the one thing people have to remember is that when Jerry Manuel had a secure job, Hawk was very supportive of him. When it came clear that Manuel was very close to being shafted, he wasn't so supportive of him. It's the same situation. If the situation gets really, really ugly here with Guillen, and it gets horrible, you're going to see Hawk Harrelson make a big switch and start criticizing Guillen when he knows the time is up for him, where it's close for him to be gone. That's just Hawk. He's going to do that, okay? If he knows you're close to gone, he's going to start criticizing you because he's going to prepare the fans so when that guy is fired, he says, you know, well, we needed to do it. We needed to do it. And this new manager, whoever it may be, he's the right person for the job. So that's just Hawk. You can't really pay attention to him. He's not playing favors because he used to support Manuel. He used to support Terry Bevington. He would support any manager who was on there until that manager got in the hot seat and was on the verge of being fired. Then he turns on him. And that's just Hawk in a nutshell.
Well, I think it's also the organization trying to, I'm guessing, you know, Reinsdorf and everyone kind of want him to be the voice and to support moves because, I mean, the announcers are paid for by the organization.
Although you have to say this, that over the past few weeks, Hawk and DJ, they've been a little bit more critical of the team. Probably still have a ways to go to get to the fairness point, but they've been a little bit more accurate.
That's the one thing that stinks. It takes our team to play bad for these guys to really be. I mean, they've been a joy to listen to when this team struggled. I mean, Darren Jackson's always a joy to listen to, but you always have Hawk kind of stepping up and defending the team. Mm-hmm. And I know people disagree with me. There's a lot of people that don't like Darren Jackson, but Darren Jackson is a damn good baseball guy. Yeah. He knows what he's talking about with the game. He adds a lot to the game. And sometimes he says things, and then you have Hawk just jump in and say something completely ridiculous, and I just want to slap Hawk.
I think Hawk's a smart guy. I think when you have to take what he says with a grain of salt. And if he goes out there and he says something, just try to take it down a couple levels and say, okay, this is the truth. You know, and, you know, a perfect example was yesterday's game. You know, it was just kind of fresh in my mind. Tadi Taguchi, he had his first at-bat, and he had a horrible, horrible at-bat against A.J. Burnett. And Darren Jackson made that very clear. You know, what do you say? That's not a swing you want to write home about. But he made it clear that it was a very bad swing. And then Hawk goes around and says it, you know, but, you know, he could put a really good swing on with his next pitch. You know, just he had to make it clear that as ugly as that swing was, Tadi Taguchi has the capabilities of putting a really good swing on right now.
That's really true. Because Iguchi does that. He can look ugly.
Yeah, but the timing of it was like he had to make that known really loud and clear, you know, so you know, you follow up a negative with a positive at all times.
Mm-hmm. And with Hawkey, kind of has that ego that I think it hurts because Jackson is probably smarter. I'm not saying he knows more about the game of baseball because Hawk Harrelson's been in baseball, you know, 50-plus years.
But the problem is when you have a younger guy like him, you do look at the game differently. You know, you're a guy like Hawk.
He's closer to baseball, and Hawk Harrelson was more talented. Darren Jackson was never that talented of a ball player, so he had to really scrape and get by doing the little things and doing all that stuff. And obviously in the olden days, pretty much everyone had to do the little things, so Hawk had to do all
but
that.
The thing but is when you're a Darren Jackson and you're on that bench much of your career, you see things from a totally different perspective. And since he's younger, he's played the game, you know, later, obviously, than Hawk, and the game has changed and it has evolved. And when you're dealing with a guy like Hawk who's older, his theories and his mindset is probably set in stone, where in Darren Jackson, he's probably still picking things up. So you get a different perspective and a different angle on things, I think.
Yeah. And all this commentary, I think it's, you know, it's good, and it's going to be exciting. Like, this is what, you know, playoff baseball, and the Sox have put themselves in a position that these next 2 months, the stretch run, are going to matter.
Yeah.
You play good these last 2 months, and you're going
to
be in the playoffs.
And that's what we have to remember. You know, as bad as the Sox have been, you know, I was telling you this before we were doing the show, you know, you hear people coming up to me or, you know, people in general saying, hey, what's wrong with the Sox? And then once again, you look at the standings and you say, it's a 600 team that people are wondering what's wrong with them. And, you know, it's obviously not to disagree, but it's similar to what happens in New York. You know, if the Yankees don't make the playoffs, hell, if the Yankees don't make the World Series, everybody wonders what's wrong. Here with the Sox now, since they won the World Series last year, if they lose two games in a row, what's wrong?
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. Expectations are raised when you win the big game.
Yes, yes.
And I mean, really, they should be. We went out, we got, you know, we tried to make the team better, and Ken Williams, you know, did a good job at that. So you sit there and you expect, I mean, I'm not saying you expect to win the World Series every year.
No.
But you do expect to get into the playoffs where you have the opportunity to win the World Series, because that's the key. You get yourself in and be one of those four teams, and now you got a chance. You got a legitimate chance. Mm-hmm. And it's August, you know, 7th, August 8th today, 7th. And we have about, you know, till October 1st or so, and you got probably 50 games to play, and you see what happens. This is what it's all about. You see if you're good enough. These 50 games are going to make, they're going to be the difference, because we're right there.
Yeah.
With really, a playoff spot in hand.
And really, the one thing, and I know people don't really care when I say stuff like this or whatever, but I'm curious to see the Sox play good for the next 2 weeks and try to get to next year and try to get close to, you know, what they did last year. And if they end up pulling off, if they end up getting 96 wins and they don't make the playoffs, it's not because they screwed up. 96 wins is still a hell of a lot of wins. In order for them to get to that level, they still have to play some pretty damn good baseball the rest of the season. So that's what I'm curious. I'd like to see this team just improve and become a better team, and then go from there. And if they're playing good baseball and they get their wins, you look at the standings and you say, okay, where are they? Are they in first place? Are they have the wild card? Where are they at? And go from there. Because you know what? If they play the way they've been playing and they somehow make it to the playoffs playing like this, I wouldn't be too confident with them going very far anyway. So I'd rather I'd rather not even them even bother making it if they're going to be playing the way they've been playing most of this year.
I mean, the fact of the matter is they're going to have to get better.
Yes.
And you know what? You got 2 months. You got a chance right now. You're in position. So now you got to go do it. You got to prove that you're capable of being, you know, a playoff team and maybe a World Series caliber team. And now just do it. Let's see what happens. And we'll be back next week to talk about it. And remember, Chicago Bears training camp's going on. You had a preseason game yesterday. I watched a little bit of it. You have Cedric Benson just got hurt. You know, they just offered apparently a fourth-round draft pick for Ashley Lalee. Big help because, as far as I'm concerned, wide receiver depth is our biggest weakness. You have the Chicago Bulls. It's been a little quiet now in the offseason, but this is a team that they release a schedule. They open up Halloween against the Miami Heat, defending world champions or NBA champions. And then you have the Blackhawks. They just traded Kyle Calder or Tyler Arneson, one of the two of them. I think it was Calder. And so check that out. It's TalkBears.com, TalkBeehawks.com, and TalkBulls.com. And we will be back next week to tell you how the White Sox did, what's going on in the world of White Sox, and to give you our take. Because we are the experts of White Sox baseball.
Is that our slogan?
Thanks for listening. Yes.
Okay. See you next week.